What y'all doing? Just step aside and let me on in now.
Why you need him to do that? You big and strong enough to push past us?
Well, that wouldn't be too polite now, would it, Miss Annie? I don't know why I'm talking to you anyway. Smoke.
Don't talk to him. You're talking to me right now. Why you can't just walk your big ass up in here without an invite, huh? Go ahead. Admit to it.
Admit to what?
That you dead.
So you listening to this? Now we out here playing games, telling ghost stories in place of doing what we ought to do.
And what is it we supposed to be doing?
Being kind to one another and being polite. Now we is one people, and we shouldn't go in barging into other folks' places uninvited. So
you've been in and out of here all day. Ain't never need an invite then. Yeah, something ain't adding up.
Can I at least get my money?
Careful.
Hello, it's me, your boy, Terry, here for an old solo cast this week. Thanks very much for joining me. We basically, like we were talking on last week's episode, we got our dates mixed up 2 weeks ago and kind of had to rush in an episode last week, which meant we would record it and release it on the same week. It'll sneak behind the curtain. We normally record like a week in advance. And so now we're shy an episode for this week, main feed. So I took it upon myself to, you know, let you guys know what I've been watching this week. You know, as if it's such a big chore for me. We kicked it off there at the top of the show with a clip from Sinners, the smash hit from Ryan Coogler starring Michael B. Jordan, among many other people as well. But I talked about it a bit last week on the episode, but I really feel like I didn't dig into enough of what I wanted. I had more to say, but it's a bit difficult with Andy not having seen it. And, you know, a jam-packed show to get through, but I wanted to make you people aware of it, and then maybe just for those of you who have seen it, you get something out of it, and if you haven't, maybe it'll drive you to go see it. I'm standing firm on my assumption that it is the best movie of the year so far in what has been a lean start to the year, you know. I was actually going to do, like, this is going to be all my top five movies of the year so far. And I have five ones that I've quite liked. But it was a little thin on the ground. And, you know, I have a couple more I will talk about. And I've actually been going back into old movie watching mode. You know, watching stuff from a few years past. Just that have tickled my fancy. Because, you know what, it's there on the streaming service, so you may as well use it while they are here, before they eventually go away. And they will go away, folks. That's why you want to get your physical media in. How about this for a segue? I just bought a movie a couple of weeks ago and watched it over this lovely bank holiday weekend called The Worst Person in the World. It was a movie from 2021 that I had not seen. From Norway, starring Renate Rensve, I think her name is. She has crossed over to a few different American projects. Probably the highest profile one, she was in that Apple TV show starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Presumed Innocent. It's a remake of a 1991 or maybe 1990 movie starring Harrison Ford. Pretty okay. Pretty decent. Not amazing. Some puzzling decisions in that Jake Gyllenhaal plays a roided up monster, but I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about The Worst Person in the World, and it's a good contrast with Sinners, shall we say. Worst Person in the World is also, I've logged them both as five stars on Letterboxd, but for different reasons. Sinners, I think, is a very populist, crowd-pleasing blockbuster. Yeah, I guess it is a blockbuster now. It's reached that status. It's a genre movie. It's a vampire movie. But it has so much stuff going on in it. And I will come back to explore that in a few minutes. But Worst Person in the World is a 5-star movie because it deals with the human condition. It is about a woman in her late 20s, I guess. Maybe it picks up a little bit earlier than that, maybe her early 20s. And it kind of shows her wanting to be a doctor, giving that up, wanting to be a photographer, giving that up, and wanting to be a writer. And basically, like a lot of us were in our 20s, kind of aimless. And it follows her in a series of relationships that she gets into with different types of men. Some she thinks, oh, this older artist type is right for me. Oh, no, there's a guy who I met at a party who's amazing. He's the one for me. And it's hard to dig into, but there's this sense in the movie of like, oh, this is so fucking real. Like, I've lived this. I've been through this. I know that this is, you know, I know all the feelings that the person is going through. And watching it now, say 10 to 15 years, you know, I'm that age older than the character is throughout the movie. There's the sense of, oh, I want to go back there, even though my life now is, you know, so immeasurably better. You know, I'm married, have two kids, own a home. It's all going very well, knock on wood. But there is a scene in the movie where she is at a function with her partner, and, you know, he's all caught up with his new book launch or whatever. So she decides to just go, and then she's walking home, and she sees a party going on, and decides to invite herself in, and then ends up spending the evening with some random guy. They stay up till like 7 in the morning. They kind of talk about the boundaries of cheating. Is it cheating if I do this or whatever? And I was like, oh, remember nights like that? Like where it's literally bright out and people are going to work and you're going home. And it's like, oh, that weird panging for it. Whereas now I'm like, yeah, well, like that's horrible. If I did that now, I'd be in absolute bits. But to do it back then, it was like, just part of your life. Anyway, it stirred up a lot of emotions in me. It's told in 12 parts with, of 10 parts, sorry, 10 parts with an epilogue and a prelude. So it's 12 parts, not 12 acts. It's kind of just like, you know, one part might be 10 minutes. There's certain parts as the film goes on, like part 9 or part 10 in the film is quite long, and you feel the difference of it, but it's a heavy subject. It kind of relates to somebody she knows who is has gotten sick very quickly, terminal cancer. And I was sitting here watching it with my wife Faye, and basically they're having a conversation, and he starts talking about what he's doing now, and he's like, all I do is watch old movies and listen to my old music. And like when he was saying that, I'm like nodding along, being like, yes, I mean, I think that's what I would do if I knew I had whatever amount of months left to live. I probably would revisit all the old art that I loved throughout my life. And that kind of made me think a bit existentially about what makes you happy in life and, you know, what do you cherish and stuff like that. But then in a scene not too later, he says, oh, when he's been doing all that, it's not for the love of the art. It's me clinging to life that I had that I don't want to give up. And I'm afraid to die. And I was like, oh. And then a kind of another sledgehammer blow hits you from a different angle. This movie is incredible. Like, I had heard a lot of good things about it when it came out. It came out during pandemic. And it's about 2 hours long. And I had started to watch this, I think, in 2023 when I moved into this house. And I turned it off after 15 minutes because I knew it was a film that I probably wanted to watch with my wife, as opposed to watching it by myself late at night sometimes when I'm in my movie vampire mode. So if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend it. I think it is available on the Mubi streaming service if you have that subscription. You probably get it on one of your old Fire Sticks that are hacked if you have it. I went and bought the Blu-ray because that's the kind of guy I am. And I don't regret it one bit. To loop back to Sinners, another, like I said, another 5-star movie that has a lot of, I know it's not existential, but it has a lot of themes running through the movie that kind of relate to real life, and they hit you in a different way. Like, I kind of talked about it with Andy, and that there is the protagonist vampire in the movie is Irish. And I heard Ryan Coogler, the director and writer of the movie, talking about it, and the reason he made him Irish and why they kind of infuse traditional Irish music into the movie alongside the movie is about the blues, and the protagonist characters are, you know, they set up a juke joint, which, you know, it all kind of is a part of their life, and it's a big kind of focus is what these people want to do in their time. They've had a hard life, a lot of work on the plantation, and all they want to do is go to a juke joint and listen to some music, some blues, and let off some steam. And it's their kind of main, the people who are making the music, it's, you know, their only form of creativity. And he mentioned that the Irish was very much the same. Traditional Irish music kind of came under the oppression of the English. And weirdly, I mean, people have said it before, you know, the Commitments has the line of, you know, Irish are the blacks of Europe or whatever like that. Like, so it kind of, when he kind of mentioned that, like, oh, the Irish people and, say, black Southern Americans have a lot in common, I was like, oh, that's so interesting. And it's kind of a piece that I guess had always been floating around in my brain, but to see it kind of cemented in this way was really enthralling. And there's a scene with the rocky road to Dublin where they're you know, it happens maybe 2/3 of the way through the movie, so a lot of people have been turned into vampires. The movie is essentially Assault on Precinct 13 or From Dusk Till Dawn or whatever you want. It's one of those where you're in a confined space and you have to hold off these attackers that are coming in through the window, or you know one of the Night of the Living Dead, even, like, it's something like that, you know. But the first, that doesn't really kick in. The movie is 2 hours 20 minutes long. It doesn't kick in till about an hour into the movie, and to me that is a feature, not a bug, because you get to luxuriate in, you know, 45 minutes of meeting all these characters. And they have all these scenes that are, like, integral to you getting to know everybody's there, so that when the inevitable happens in a horror movie, when somebody gets killed or turned into a vampire or whatever, it makes you feel so much more for them. Coogler knows what he's doing. He has the goods, kind of the same way if Spielberg were ever to do a movie like that, I'd imagine it would be something like this. About 2/3 of the way through the movie, a bunch of the original kind of plantation workers and some of our main characters have been turned into vampires. They're outside the juke joint, and the clip I played at the start is actually, you know, quite prescient to this, because you can't come in unless you're invited in, typical vampire rules. And they have a lot of fun with that. That's one of the funnier scenes, where, you know, somebody who has been working in the juke joint all night, he goes out to take a piss, and all of a sudden now he returns acting strange. So you know what's happened. But the idea that he can't come in because he hasn't invited in, like, it's a big piece of the movie. So they're kind of at a standoff, and Jack O'Connell, who plays Remick, who's the main vampire, he starts belting out the Rocky Road to Dublin, and the way the camera moves and swirls around him, and there's like 25 other people there, and they are mostly, you know, black Americans. They start doing an Irish jig. I start doing Irish dancing, and it looks like they're having the fucking time of their lives, even though these are vampires that are just trying to, you know, take over the world, essentially. And the other kind of prescient point of that is that they, when they're saying it to the people, they're oppressed people, and they're like, you can't say you enjoy living your life under the thumb of, you know, white Americans here that treat you this badly. Come with us, we'll offer you no pain, everlasting life, and a way out of this. It's one of the rare deals with the devil that like makes sense to these characters. Like, after they're turned, they're like happy to be turned, and they try, you know, you get the impression that like, oh, they want to bring the rest of their friends and family over to this side because how good it feels to them. And I know that a lot of vampire story has been linked in the past with like drug use, heroin or whatever like that. So that all ties in there, but it's just done very, very well. But if you haven't seen it yet, got out for a very rare date night the other night, and I was very close to suggesting we go see this again. Now, I would have been shot down because she knows I've seen it already, but that's kind of, was like, you know what, if she was like, oh, why don't we just go to the cinema, I'd be like, let's go see this again. It's one of those films that I would love to see again on the big screen. So if you get the chance, go see it. Something else that I've watched recently that is new is it's a movie on Now TV. Again, I was trying to bulk up my numbers and see what could I watch. And I saw the trailer, I think it was January, the trailer came out, and it was a new Josh Hartnett movie. And I was like, oh, after Trap, he's getting the headline on a movie. The movie is called Flight or Fight. And this is, they've slapped the tagline from the producers of John Wick. And you don't know which producers of John Wick it is, because the director situation there was two directors on the first one. There was Chad Stahelski, who ended up helming the rest of the John Wick movies. And there was David Leitch, who went off to kind of become his own cottage industry to himself in Hollywood. He's kind of the main action guy at the moment there, in that he will make a lot of action movies that are okay. Like, he did Deadpool 2, I think he did Hobbs and Shaw, which is not very good, to be honest. Some of the action is serviceable in it, but he did Bullet Train, you know. And the reason why I'm saying, oh, I think it's maybe him as the producer, or that side of the John Wick split, is that this movie is Bullet Train on a plane. And it's, the idea is Josh Hartnett is in Bangkok. He's been disavowed by whatever government agency he used to work for. And essentially, there's this shady company that's tracking this cyber terrorist called the Ghost. But they're a bit of an altruistic person, in that their terrorism is all against big business and stuff like that. So they contact him and they say if they can get on the plane that they know this person is getting on in the next 40 minutes, his record will be expunged, he'll be able to return home. Bit of an Inception piece in there. And he will, you know, his life will go back to normal. The past 2 years he's been stranded there, and he's become a bit of a drunk and a mess, all that cliched stuff. And then you throw in the person that is asking him to do this job, and the reason why he has to do it is there was a team in Bangkok that was sent there that are all dead, and the next closest team won't be able to get there till before the plane takes off. So the handler is, of course, his ex-girlfriend, who was the one who had to fire him after whatever happened. And actually, it's weird, because a little while ago, we did Last Boy Scout, and Bruce Willis's character in that, like, loses all his, you know, Secret Service. I think actually Josh Hartnett is Secret Service as well, isn't it? His credentials, whatever, because there's a politician that was getting too rough with a call girl, and Bruce would have stepped in, and like, that's the exact reason why Josh Hartnett has been, you know, cast away or whatever. But if you're going to steal from one of the greats, man, you know. But then the movie is, he gets on the plane and it turns out that somebody leaked the information that the ghost is on the plane. And now, in the interim, a bunch of assassins have got on this, like, two-story jumbo jet plane. So Josh Hartnett has to first find out who the ghost is on the plane and then make sure that he can keep her or him alive before the rest of the assassins get there. All very silly. The movie is 95 minutes long. It is enjoyable. I gave it 3.5 stars, I think, on Letterboxd. And the most enjoyable thing about it is, you know, Josh Hartnett is back. He is a leading man once again after Trap, and he's phenomenal in Trap. Even if you don't like the movie, that's also on Now TV, I believe, which I liked 2/3 of that movie. I liked the first third, the middle third kind of lost me, and then I liked the last third quite a bit. He is incredible in that movie, and just nice to see him back doing shit. Like, it's been too long. It's also hard to, like, understate how good he is in Oppenheimer. Like, when he was on the screen in Oppenheimer, I was like, oh my god, he, you know, great to see him. And then, like, he fucking kills it for, like, I'd say he's on screen for like 10 to 15 minutes tops cumulatively, but it's kind of sprinkled about, but, like, he just pops fucking every time he's on it. So happy he's back. And he also did a Black Mirror episode with Aaron Paul, which is actually, I think, a couple of seasons ago, but it was one of the better new Black Mirror episodes that I've seen in a long time. I would recommend that as well. And then, rounding it off, I'll talk briefly on a movie that I think will be coming to streaming soon. It's on Max in America. I got it on my Fire Stick. It's called Black Bag, and it's by Steven Soderbergh, our boy. Well, my boy. Andy's boy as well, I guess. You know, he made those Oceans movies. But it is a spy caper starring Michael Fassbender and Cate Blanchett as husband and wife. And Michael Fassbender has been hired to, well, he works in MI6, whichever is domestic, I guess. MI5 is international, MI6. No, MI5 is domestic, because Bond is MI6, right? Anyway, whatever. There is a mole, and they think his, like, Fassbender's character has been hired to find the mole, and he has a list of 5 names, and he and his wife is one of them, and he invites the 4 other names on the list for dinner, and he spikes the, this is literally like the first 10 minutes of the movie, it's fucking great. He spikes the food so that they're all a bit loosey-goosey with their talk, and it's like there's a fucking dinner party scene. It's like 15-20 minutes, lit with natural candlelight, so it looks like weirdly unnerving but also fucking incredible at the same time. And the shit just kind of gets out of control straight out of the gate. Again, it's, I think the movie is like 95 minutes, 100 minutes, and it's a good old fashioned kind of spy caper, like something akin to Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, but less stuffy. It's very stylish, it's funny, the performances are great. Like, Cate Blanchett is fucking incredible in it, and I would do anything for her if I was married to her. Oops, whatever that was. Don't mind that. but yeah, like, Fassbender is great as the kind of stuffy spy, when normally he's kind of the cool guy or intense guy that's going off the edge. He seems to play, you know, it almost exclusively spies these days. He's on a Paramount Plus show called The Agency, which I also highly recommend. Again, just nice to see him back as well. It's been a while. He made some very bad decisions in the late teens. I don't know what, 2000, not the aughts, whatever, the teens, 20 teens. I don't know what they call them. He took a break and kind of came back with The Killer on Netflix, which again, it was like my number 2 movie of 2023. can't recommend it enough. The agency, and now this. Okay, the killer, he's an assassin, but he's, you know, he might as well be a spy. He's cold, calculating, intense, brooding. He's a little less so on this. He kind of at times seems like a bit of a simp to the wife, and like she is this kind of firecracker and like incredible ball of energy that like she's almost the man in the marriage. That's very outdated of me to say, you know, gender norms and stuff like that. But yeah, it is again another that would be up there with Sinners, like 1 and 2 maybe for, you know, my movies of 2025 so far. There's a lot coming down the pike that I'm excited about. We're in the month of May. Mission Impossible Final Reckoning is coming. Let's fucking go. There's some good stuff during the summer. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning is coming to Netflix, I think, this week. So, you know, maybe it's next week, but it's coming. And if you haven't watched it already, fucking, it's right there for you. And it's perfect. Not a perfect movie, but it's perfect timing for the new one coming out. Yeah, there's some good summer movie stuff as well. I think a lot of the stuff that makes money will not be my cup of tea, as per usual in the summer movie season. Haven't seen Thunderbolts. I was tempted to go see it, and then they saw that they've actually decided to rename it The New Avengers. And I'm like, all right, like, you know. Okay, we get it. But I think Fantastic Four if anything, that's turned me off going to see it, to be honest. If anything, Fantastic Four looks like it's going to be a big hit. You got a Superman coming this year. Although, you know, they very rarely get Superman right on the big screen. Okay, well, I might pivot for the last few minutes and talk a little bit about some TV I've been watching.
You ain't got what it takes, Tejas.
What'd you say?
We got this dance contest in the bag.
Oh, yeah? Who you think you talking to, son? We gonna win this contest, right, Jim? Let's go! Holy war to a groove that's so divine, turning water into wine. And when you lose your mind, we gon' turn the other cheek.
Woo! Turn the other cheek. Turn it.
Miracle right here, nerd. I pronounce you healed. Come on, drop them damn crutches. Get to dancing.
Turn the other cheek.
Woo! Turn the other cheek. Turn it.
Turn, 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 turn.
All the way around.
Turn the other cheek. Dance. Those suckers don't stand a chance. Dance. Dance. Those suckers don't stand a chance. Dance. Dance. Got that spirit in my pants.
Eli, you gonna participate in the scene? You just gonna stand there looking like you had a damn stroke?
Damn it, baby Billy. I told you this wasn't my thing.
I can see that. It's a spectacle. You got to react to it. Open your mouth in shock or just smile with some glee. You know, some human shit.
You just don't think I'm in the mood.
Fuck it. That's lunch, everybody.
The wonderful Walton Goggins there as Uncle Baby Billy from the insanely funny The Righteous Gemstones, even, easy for me to say, which is the show that I have been kind of catching up on the last couple of weeks. It is their final season, and the last episode is dropping this week. Out of context... What is that clip? Like, out of context, he is playing Teen Jesus, which you haven't, if you haven't figured out, it's Teen Jesus. And the reason he's playing it is he didn't like the kid that was doing it and he thought he could do a better job. I can't get into the whole lore of the backstory of the Gemstones, but he is their uncle and there's three children. There's Danny McBride, Edie Patterson and Adam Devine are the three children of Eli Gemstone, who is John Goodman. That's the premise of the show. He's a super preacher, pastor guy. You know, they have all these mega churches and his three children. They're insanely wealthy. The show itself it kind of starts out like any other Danny McBride television show, which is this insanely entitled, pig-headed, ignorant guy does fucked up shit and his life starts to spiral and it's incredibly funny and dark and you kind of can't look away. Kind of car crashy. And as the Righteous Gemstones has evolved, the other siblings are just as fucked up as him and as bad, and if not more at times. If anything, I find him kind of rooting for his character more so than the other ones. This season is all about how the dad has retired and now they're running the church, and some of them are doing well, some of them not so well. They're kind of having the reckoning with themselves as, you know, the leaders of it. Are they losing their congregation? Some sort of ideas that they come up with are not as good as the dad's ideas, stuff like that. This season, one of the main plot lines is dad is kind of moving on with his life after his wife, who died many years ago. He kind of gets into a relationship with her best friend, and you know, she's separated from her partner. It's, you know, finding love later in life, etc. It's a kind of meandering season in that, like, as you know, they announced this is going to be the final season, and the first episode of the final season, spoiler alert, but it was a kind of a huge thing where, well, I say huge thing, but a big thing, that none of the regular characters were in it. It was set during the Civil War, and Danny McBride directed it. And they got Bradley Cooper to play like his great, great granddaddy or whatever. And that kind of was like, oh, this is a big kind of statement episode. And then they haven't really followed up on that. It kind of just has been seen in the background that, like, oh, these Gemstones, they don't come from the most, you know, highest stock that they think they do. And most of it is kind of just, they're trying to break up their dad's new relationship. But as I say this, it is insanely funny, insanely entertaining. And you have Walton Goggins here just sprinkled in as their maniac uncle, who, by the way, I haven't even mentioned it. He runs a TV show called Baby Billy's Bible Bonkers. It's a game show. And also he's addicted to cocaine as well in this season. It's just great. It's so funny. I'm gonna miss it. I'm going to be sad to miss it, but it kind of makes me want to go back and revisit some Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals even. Vice Principals only ran two seasons, but that was kind of when McBride and Goggins kind of first hooked up, and he's been around ever since. They talk about Goggins being so good on The White Lotus, and he was very good on it, don't get me wrong. If he's going to win an Emmy, though, I'd much rather he win it for this. This is incredible, some of the stuff he's doing in it. Highly recommend it. Give it a go. And the other TV show that I'm watching at the moment, week to week, is Andor season 2. It's back on Disney Plus. And if you're a fan of Star Wars movies and you're a fan of Rogue One, he's the character from there. Like, Rogue One is the movie about how they steal the plans for the Death Star, so that Luke will know where the point of weakness is. I think that's what it is. Where Luke will know what the point of weakness is when they're attacking it. But all these people, they die to make that happen, essentially. And Andor is the prequel show to that prequel movie. And I remember watching it last year, being like, I'll give it a go. People have talked about it. And it's Tony Gilroy, who has made one of my favorite movies ever. Favorite movies of the last 25 years, since the year 2000 anyway. I'll put it in that bracket. We're covering it on the Patreon series for the year 2007, coming up soon. It's Michael Clayton, starring George Clooney. But Tony Gilroy wrote and directed that masterpiece. If you want to hear us talk about that, you can join up for the low, low fee of €5 a month. Come on over. We're having a very good time there. And we've got lots of polls and stuff. And you get early access. And, you know, there's the Patreon plug. We've got a back catalogue of all of our MCU movies, all of our 90s action, all that stuff there. We just did Tony Scott. We did heist movies there recently. It's a good time, and a bunch of one-off episodes as well. But when I heard he was kind of shepherding the show, because they had brought him on to do a bunch of reshoots for Rogue One, and he fell in love with the character, essentially, while he was kind of doing a gig for hire. So he pitched the show to them, and the first series, I think it's something like 12 episodes, and it's like broken into three episode arcs. So the first episode is like him doing something, getting on the radar of the Empire, and has to get out of his home planet. Then the next three episodes are like joining the rebellion, but he has to pull off this like fucking train heist with cousin from the bear. He's in that arc. And then the next three, I think, are like he has done this, he's got some money, he ends up being arrested wrongfully for something, and he's in this prison. They do manual labor, and it turns out they're actually making parts for the Death Star, I think. And then by the end of the season, he has joined up with the rebellion in full, and it's made incredibly well. And so I'm kind of tuned in for season two, thinking, oh yeah. I think it's been about a year or two since I watched it, and they don't do a recap at the start. They don't hold your hand with this show, so it's not something that, like, I was at one point, I was on my phone, I was like, I gotta wind that back. What were you talking about? It's a very dense show, but it's the best Star Wars thing I've ever seen, probably. Like, I'm not a huge Star Wars guy. I've watched all of them, but they've never been my, you know, Rosetta Stone or anything like that. So when I was looking at this, I was like, this is compelling, incredible, the performances are brilliant. Yeah, I don't know, it's the best Star Wars thing I've ever seen. It's kind of the best sci-fi show I've seen in a long time as well. And there's a lot of sci-fi shows out there that to me are kind of, a lot of them are like, okay, so, you know, subpar. This is incredible. This is really well made by somebody who knows what he's doing, has a clear vision, and wants to take you there. And when I came in with it, like, okay, I'll give this a whirl attitude, and I was completely sucked in. And I'm loving season two. I think there's six episodes up now. They're dropping them in three episodes per week, which is a bit of a funny way to do it, but I don't mind it. At least it's something different, and it gives you time to catch up over the week. Excuse me, I'm recording this late at night, and it's been a long weekend in every sense of the word. But those will be the two kind of big shows I'm watching at the moment. I've not cracked on with the new John Hamm series on Apple TV Plus called Your Friends and Neighbors. I haven't gone for The Last of Us season two, mostly because I hadn't played the game. I have played the game, but not finished it. Although, from what I was seeing, they kind of stick very true to how that happens. So I think a big thing happens in episode two that, I won't spoil it. I won't even go near spoiling it if you haven't played the game. It's rough. Anyway, thanks so much for listening in, guys. I'm going to wrap it up here. I'm going, Jesus, almost 40 minutes. Like I said, you can get us over on the Patreon, the little fee of €5 a month. And also, if you sign up there and you want to particular topic you want us to talk about, you can post it in over there and we will cover that for you as well. But yeah, we're doing movies over there. We're doing the year 2007 at the moment. I think next up is going to be a specific actor. We've got Val Kilmer locked in as one of the choices to honor his recent passing. I think Andy's picking somebody. I'm pretty sure it's going to be like Tom Cruise films he hasn't seen. I was kind of saying non-IP Tom Cruise. And then we've got a couple more, but once we've decided on who they are, you can vote on who we cover over there. It's a really nice community. It's a good time. You can get us over on the Instagram, What's So Great About Pod. You can follow me there. I think I'm down as The Boy Toner. Andy over there, Andy Cantwell 85, maybe. Just type in his name. He's big enough over there now. You'll get all his never ending. I tell you, it's going to be a lean summer. It's never ending Liverpool content. What's he going to do when there's no football on? That's the question. That's when you'll have to get really creative. And I, for one, I'm here for it. Otherwise, we'll see you. Well, you'll hear us back next week when there's two of us in the stewed. And then over on the Patreon, we're covering David Fincher's masterwork, Zodiac. I'm fucking excited to sink my teeth into that. We might even have a couple of new awards as well. All right. Goodbye.
Then off to reap the corn and live where I was born. I cut a stout black thorn for to banish ghosts and goblins. A brand new pair of brogues to rattle over the box and frightened all the dogs on the rocky road to Dublin. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, in the merry month of May, from me home I started, left the girls of Tuam, were nearly broken-hearted, saluted father dear, kissed me darling mother, drank a pint of beer, my grief in tears to smother, then off to reap the corn, leave where I was born, cut a stout black thorn to banish ghosts and goblins, brand new pair of brogues, rattling over the bogs and frightened all the dogs, on the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the way to Dublin, whack the lolly-da. In Mullingar that night I rested limbs so weary, started by daylight, next morning bright and airy, took a drop of the beer to keep me heart from sinking, that's the Paddy's cure, whenever he's on for drinking, to hear the lassie smile, laughing all the while, at me curious style, could set your heart a bubble and ask me was I hard, wages I required till I was almost tired of the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hug the hair and turn her down the rocky road, and all the way to Dublin, back for lolly-da. In Dublin it's the rave, I thought it such a pity to be so soon deprived of view of that fine city. Then I took a straw, all among the quality bundle it was tall. In a neat locality something crossed me mind, when I looked behind a bundle could I find upon me stick a wobbling inquiring for the rogue, said me tonic rogue.